Are you looking at me, treasure?
Welcome to the Anime Podcast. This week we find ourselves moored off the southeast coast of the Isle of Wight. Came here about a week and a half ago for the UK election. Had a bit of a drink session and unfortunately we were captured and then keel-hauled by the ghost pirate Jeffrey Epstein. So unfortunately, only I am left alive to report, but as often is the case with these weekly episodes, I'm sure the other two will come back in some form, like the Emperor Palpatine, with no explanation. So look forward to that next week. In the meantime, we have a collection of bizarre audio for you. The first of our drunken attempts to analyze the UK election results in real time. It was recorded on the 12th of December. And another three contributions from very unfortunate anarchists based in the UK who happen to be have lived through it and their own views on what's about to happen in the UK in regards to the left. So hopefully you enjoy that. Hopefully those of you who celebrate such things are having a good Hanukkah and will have a good Christmas and whatever else people celebrate. But that'll be me. I'll see you along with hopefully my two other supernatural co-partners in about a week or two. Happy holidays.
It is 5 minutes to ten on Thursday, the 12th of December, polling day across the United Kingdom. And welcome to the BBC Election Centre at New Broadcasting House in London.
I'm rock hard.
This is your news at 10. I've got a sticky.
Can you rub me down with some ointment? I'm ready to report.
Who's that? That was Boudicca. That was Churchill. Is that Alfred?
He was like Henry the Third or something like that. Edward the Third. God fuck this. You ever notice that British television is just a giant, we're fucking great. Have you seen how great we are?
I like RTE.
RTE is not we're great all the fucking time.
Yeah. It's the opposite. Well, if you just want to watch, that'll be fine. If you don't want to watch, that'll be all right.
We were colonised for several hundred years, you can watch if you like.
For the fourth time in the space of 5 years, the future of the United Kingdom is uncertain. And this time, with politics in deadlock, and Brexit unresolved, the stakes are higher than ever. Now, in a few moments, polling stations across the United Kingdom will close, the voting will be over, and we'll be able to reveal the result of our exit poll. That's our first hint of the possible result. Will Boris Johnson be back in number 10? Will Jeremy Corbyn beat him to it? Or will the outcome be less than clear when it comes to Jeremy Vine?
Will I be standing in front of ridiculous...
Here I am in a stupid fucking CGI thing. Where's the fucking cat?
Not by nearly enough, and the result was 2 years of chaos in Parliament. The question tonight is whether any party can get 326 seats or more and send their leader through that door.
Just to say that a series of stupid CGI images has appeared of someone on Downing Street.
Since 1923, less than a fortnight before Christmas.
Is that Nicola Sturgeon's husband?
Yeah.
Jesus, she could have done better.
And my colleague Naga Manchetti is watching the hard-fought race to declare the night's first result.
Well, all eyes are on the North East today to see who will declare first. Last time it was Newcastle, but we have found out that their neighbours...
You don't need to make this any more exciting than it already is.
The Titans of Ipswich versus the Giants of Sunderland, making them both seem equal size.
We
must shout!
So basically, there's a race to see who can call first in one of the constituencies.
There's like an old rivalry that's been going on since the 60s. There are 650 MPs to be elected. Every one of those...
Is that not too many MPs?
That is...
And my colleague Peter Jacobi is at the big screen with more details.
This has been such a hard election to predict, with the shadow of Brexit hovering over the usual tribal loyalties. Well, we're about to find out what the real numbers are, and I'm here at the giant touchscreen, which has been loaded.
We've got five giant touchscreens, each more complicated than the last.
In a few moments' time, I should be able to predict which seats are changing hands.
I'm just outside the studio.
Oh, really? Just stay still.
The vast United Kingdom and the changing political landscape.
Yes, this is the UK, but not as you know. We have made each constituency exactly the same size. So one hexagon is one MP, and it gives you much better
Scotland idea is fucking tiny, man.
Where the balance of power lies. Now, this map is laid out in the colours of the 2017 general election.
The
Republic of Ireland always should just be like a middle finger in
it. We were for years, then we left.
In chief, Andrew Neil, will be talking to many of the winners and losers, finding out why the election.
Andrew Neil, fuck off with your fucking spectacle.
You fucking, on with your daft idea.
Fucking, what are you, you fucking wig bearing prick?
In the studio and across the country, asking them what went right, what went wrong.
Why didn't I suck Boris Johnson's cock?
We're here all night.
I didn't have the opportunity.
Political editor Laura Koonsberg, she's waiting to give her immediate verdict on the exit poll. So here we are. We are just seconds away from the result of the exit poll. Our first prediction of the potential outcome of this election. More than 20,000 people were asked how they voted today at 144 polling stations right across the UK. On behalf of the BBC, ITV, and
here
Sky.
Here we go.
So, as Big Ben reaches 10 o'clock, standing by.
As Big Ben reaches his climax.
Figures, here they are.
The jizz of knowledge.
Motherfucker.
That there will be a Conservative majority when all the votes are counted after this election of December 2019. The Conservatives on 368 seats and Labour way down on 100.
Can I just say that when we did a podcast, I predicted that we would
have a Conservative majority of 86 if the votes actually tally up with this prediction. And that will be the biggest Conservative majority since Margaret Thatcher's third victory back in 1987. Let's look
That's
at
a good Labour comparison right there.
For Jeremy Corbyn, that would be the worst Labour result in modern times, and certainly worse than the figure obtained by Michael Foot back in 1983, a low point for Labour. Let's look at the wider picture.
So just to say, for people who don't know, the exit poll has revealed Conservatives at 368 for known sociopath and giant wanker. It's the easiest thing to say from Boris Johnson. 191 for Labour, which is the worst, apparently, in modern era. 55 for the SNP, which, yay, Scottish independence. Liberal Democrats at 13. PC, which is politically correct. What's that, PC?
Yeah, I don't know actually who that is.
The party created
Plaid Cymru.
Plaid Cymru, which is Welsh nationalist. Yeah. At 3, the Greens at 1, the Brexit Party at 0, always a plus. And 19 other, which is, in other words, Sinn Féin, which is a fucking political party in the DUP, which is fucking another political party. So, what that seems to suggest, if it's true, is that England has decided that it no longer wants the UK to exist. The Scottish have realised it doesn't exist anymore and have voted accordingly. The Welsh are beginning to vote accordingly, and we'll have to wait and see what is happening with Northern Ireland. So in other words, I was right, James was wrong, because I'm a cynical prick and he was an optimistic one, and that'll always fail.
Do you know what I'd be interested to find out? How many percentage of people voted?
Yeah.
I'd be very interested to find out. No, how many people?
Yeah. That's for future reference.
It'd be very interesting. Because if it was the same as before, like 67%, that suggested for a large chunk of people, even all this shit wasn't enough to get people actually invested. So even with the Labour Party promising free Wi-Fi, nationalisation of all these industries. And what happens to fucking Labour now? What the fuck happens? It's done. The Corbyn project is, for the moment, done. They'll have to. The Parliamentary Labour Party will oust them after this.
The PLP are not gonna.
They've ousted. They're gone. Yeah. They'll oust.
But like, if it was close, there would have been. Like, you could at least be like, look, there's something to work upon. But that is, if it is like that, if that's what it turns out to be, like,
they're done.
That's going to have to be like a splinter party or something.
Yeah, and they will stay a splinter party and they won't go anywhere. Because they never do. The social, there's a million splinters from the Labour Party. It's the same problem. What comes in next is Angie Burnham is going to be the fucking next leader of the Labour Party, if we're lucky. And it'll go back to fucking Blairism. It's over. That's it. Sad to say.
The most radical.
On the upside, and you've got to look on the upside, Scottish independence, reunification of Ireland, growing Welsh nationalism. Those are all good things. Britain deserved the fucking stake in its heart after everything it did.
Yeah.
Like the Ottoman Empire. Ottoman Empire fucking deserves Erdogan after what it did.
I think all empires deserve.
Absolutely. Fucking hell. Athens deserved what happens to it when it became an empire.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Deserved 500 years of Turkish rule after what it did. Maybe not quite 500 years, but, you know, 200 anyway.
It was nearly 500.
Yeah, but you had the Byzantine Empire was Greek Empire, really.
Yeah, it was a bastard empire.
It pretty much was. And it existed for 1,000 years. So,
and we still believe that.
Absolutely. And it's true.
Yeah.
So there we go. We're all fucked, apart from the Scots and the Irish. Given the fact that...
Which has always been the way.
Which has always been the way. And on the upside... The SNP has done well, so that's good. I mean, it's not great, but it's better than nothing.
I know, but the Labour manifesto is so...
No, I don't... I agree. It's
way better than anything
else. Yeah, but and fucking boomers were like, no. So in the end, what we've learned from this is it's a generational class thing. Not enough young people turned up, even though all the evidence we were looking at suggests they would. How many turned up is it going to be very important?
Yeah.
If we can find out how many people bothered to show up, it will suggest a lot. But it seems to suggest the polling... Again, we have to assume that this is right. It might not be. It could just be an absolute fucking failure.
Yeah, the difference is huge. I can't see how these...
Yeah.
It can't be, yeah. Like, there's margin of error, and then there's...
Yeah. So how the left goes forward... is by starting to come to the conclusion that England is not salvageable, and that Scotland, and in many ways, you know, the thing is, when you and I were years ago pro Scottish independence, it was because you realised that Scotland was an outlier in England, in Britain, that it was a more social democratic, more Nordic country, that, and maybe you just accept that, you know, nothing to be done. It's what's happened, you know. On that note, I'm going to pour some more wine.
Our first contribution is from Dan. He's based in Kidderminster, where he has been involved in the online canvassing for the Labour Party. He's a long-time memer. And first time podcast contributor. So I hope you enjoy this.
My name's Daniel. I'm from a small town in the Midlands called Kidderminster. It's probably 20 minutes drive from the centre of Birmingham. About 20 minutes drive from the centre of Worcester. Kind of market town in the middle of the Shires, basically. The town itself was pretty heavy industry. Based on textiles, mostly carpet making for a good couple hundred years. I'd say since the 70s, a lot of the industries just kind of faded away. Carpet factories were still about when I was a teenager. It was still an option to go into to work in the carpet factories. Now they're all gone. And nothing really has replaced it. The town itself is pretty dead. There's no real nightlife. There's no real shops. It's an absolute wasteland, really. The constituency I live in consists of three smallish towns. Bewdley, which is strongly conservative, was a port town, one of the furthest inland ports from the 1700s onwards. There were quite a few coal mines, collieries around the area that used to ship coal down to Bristol. Stourport on Severn was a small village called Mitton until, I think it was James Brindley, built the canals into the town. Basically, any industry that was there is fucked off to wherever it's gone. And now it's just a leisure and tourist town. Those two towns in particular are quite conservative due to them being retirement towns as such. There's a lot of money in the surrounding areas, the rural areas, incredibly wealthy. But Kidderminster itself has some of the most deprived areas in the UK, I think possibly in Europe. It's been solidly Tory for a long time. There was an anomaly in 97 when New Labour won on the promise of keeping the hospital that was going to be closed down, which they went back on as soon as they got into power and were kicked out pretty much straight away. People haven't forgiven them. There's actually, it's called the Kidderminster effect, where a strong independent kept getting re-elected until 2010. He was actually a good bloke, Dr. Richard Taylor, on the strength of the feeling about the hospital. In terms of canvassing, I did a lot of online canvassing, not being a member of the party due to not being able to afford to be a member of the party at the moment. Yeah, it was mostly trying to counter misinformation, trying to counter Facebook advertising misinformation, of which there was an absolute ton. I've never seen it so extreme. Trying to counter misinformation from the mainstream media, trying to explain to people what was at stake outside of Brexit, because this was a predominantly Leave area. To me, people want Brexit regardless of the consequence, because for a lot of people, it's the first vote they've ever felt like they've engaged with. And to some degree, I do understand their frustration in it not being executed, but I don't think there's enough political understanding to realise what they're setting themselves up for. Didn't canvass on the streets because, well, there's a lot going on in my life at the moment. But I do have friends that have canvassed and were canvassing. A lot of mistrust of Corbyn, which comes from the media, in my opinion. A lot of mistrust of Labour spending, which I think to some degree probably comes from trying to do too much too soon. People basically didn't trust Labour's position, which I think 10 years of propaganda that Labour caused the global economic crash has really done a number on people's brains. The Tories didn't need to canvass because this is a pretty safe seat. All I had was a constant stream of leaflets through the door saying we'll get Brexit done. Despite the local candidate who's been in since 2010 calling the people of Wyre Forest dog end voters. He was also caught in a sex scandal. I don't think it was that big a deal, but his assistant, sending his assistant out to buy sex toys. Apparently I've spoken to people who have worked for him or with him, and he apparently is not a very nice bloke, but that doesn't really surprise me. Reaction to the result, personally, I was expecting it. I was hoping for better, but I did expect it because, quite frankly, the level of media assault on Corbyn and the Labour Party has been absolutely staggering to me, and I knew the bias was there. I knew the media really wasn't fair, but the mask really slipped this time, and that I think there is a lot of trust gone amongst people who were maybe on the fence about media bias. I have a lot of people that I know who have been utterly shocked by it, to be fairly honest. Completely shocked. Just completely, absolutely cannot believe the level of abuse that the level of hostility towards someone that they feel wants to make everyone's life better. Wider reaction I've seen in some of the groups that I'm under, Labour organisers and such. There's a lot of young people who are in shock, very angry, very upset, understandably so. For a lot of them, it's their first, maybe second election and a heavy defeat. But already it seems to be coalescing into organisation. People realising that the society that you want, you're not going to be able to get purely from electioneering. That you need to organise outside of the party system. A lot of talk about setting up systems or helping out systems that are put in place to protect people that will suffer under this government. Generally, despair, but tempered with the idea that this is a movement that's just starting, that the left in the UK was basically dead for 30-ish years, maybe, and that it needs to rebuild, and that you don't destroy 40 years of an economic orthodoxy in 4 years. So I'm optimistic about the future. Whether people stick with it, it's a different thing. What happens in the next 5 years will be important. In terms of the cause of defeat, I think personally that Brexit has become a cult, or almost a religious thing for the people that really want to leave. There's no reasoning with them. You can't speak to them rationally. They just do not want to know. They want what they voted for. And fair enough, I don't really blame them. I don't want the Tories to do it, but I can understand that they were offering what they wanted. I think the Conservative Party have a very difficult task on their hands now, because they have to keep their manifesto promises, which I think they'll throw out the window straight away, as well as delivering what people think they want, although I'm not sure that people necessarily know what they want. I personally would prefer a Tory majority over a Labour minority that would struggle to get anything done. That's the accelerationist in me, I think. In terms of way forward, I would say that the urge to move to the centre has to be resisted within the Labour Party, and I think the membership as a whole is quite keen to not move to the centre. After seeing the election results, what's not being talked about is how the centre completely has collapsed. We need to win the argument, but you have to wait for people to get what they want and realise maybe it's not what they want. But basically, my personal philosophy is that we need to build the society that we want outside of the society as it is. Build a supporting society, and maybe even a sort of state within a state, that's ready for when the wheels do come off the bus, really. It's the only way I can see it happening. And the will seems to be there. It does seem to be there at the moment. A lot of people are angry. A lot of people are wanting to channel that anger into productive things rather than pulling their hair out and crying all day. So I'm optimistic, but I think it's going to be a rough few years.
Our second contribution is from Will, who's an academic based in England and sometimes in Dublin. His views are particularly notable given his experience working with students who are suffering through Tory austerity and have been over the last few years. So do listen up.
So the UK had a general election and overwhelmingly voted to keep punching themselves in the dick for the next 5 years. A multitude of wonks from the lanyard-wearing classes predicted a variety of scenarios before the big event last Thursday, so the country knew to brace itself either for a slight Tory majority or perhaps another hung parliament. Oops. So how did we end up with Labour being devastated quite so conclusively? One explanation certainly could not include the shining virtuous character of Boris Johnson, nor any other Conservative. Boris was booed in almost every town he visited. He refused to participate in a variety of televised debates, probably because he knows himself to be a liability. Increased exposure equals fewer votes. And in the debates in which he did participate, his previous homophobic, Islamophobic, racist elitism was brought up and poorly handled. Jacob Rees-Mogg, a parody piece of performance art, presumably, stated that people were incinerated in Grenfell Towers because they lacked common sense. To clarify, the people in Grenfell he was referring to were the people who listened to the advice of firefighters. Perhaps Mr. Rees-Mogg considers himself to know better about fire safety than the very people whose job it is to know about fire safety. Following his comments, Rees-Mogg was tucked away in deep, dark Somerset, probably in a poorly lit room with no one but a nanny and a close family relative for company. Boris Johnson's own dad then went on television and claimed that the British public were stupid. despite all this open hostility our ruling elite of aristocrats show towards the British public, we finally got revenge by voting for them. A few hypotheses may explain this odd choice. A. Individual members of the British public think that the Tories aren't referring to them when they're being called stupid, irresponsible, or ugly. Perhaps they see themselves as apart from society. Given the way communities and a sense of solidarity has been obliterated in the UK, this is a fairly compelling hypothesis. B. The British public are stupid and have voted against their own interest. This hypothesis is unsatisfying, given the lack of a further account to explain why they did so. C. The British public have intuited some sort of weird upper-class loving fetishism. Okay, so this is mostly a joke, but it would explain why so many members of the British public love the royal family. I find it incredible that when I make a pop about the royal family when I'm teaching, loads of the pupils rush to their defence. Programmes like Downton Abbey and The Queen, a new series of which has just been released, and films featuring toffs falling in love on an estate or solving some hard sums to save us from Germans are in constant demand. The election was also held incredibly close to Armistice Day. Given how sombre, sanctified and sanitised this day is, nationalistic sentiment, a thing that appeals to and mobilises the Tory base, would have been high. Anyway, until the Great British Bake Off is filmed on a council estate using ingredients bought from Aldi, rather than the bunting-clad Waitrose aesthetic marquee Middle England nonsense that it currently is, I'll stick to my perpetual watching of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, thanks. If the Conservatives didn't win the general election, perhaps Labour lost it instead. This might indeed be the case. The Labour leadership, and most obviously Jeremy Corbyn himself, failed to make the party palatable to the electorate. Or that's certainly what the Boomer press would have you believe. A closer analysis, most notably that which was done by the London School of Economics, revealed that Jeremy Corbyn had been vilified by the media. No less than 75% of all news stories about Corbyn were, according to the Commission study, either outright lies or extremely misleading. Corbyn's message probably didn't get across, not in virtue of Corbyn's inability to communicate, but in virtue of those whose job it is to communicate refusing to do so. Corbyn had been labelled a terrorist sympathiser, a Marxist, a UK hater, and anti-business. And, dear listener, I wish he was those things, but, and this saddens me, he's just a slightly left-of-centre politician. Britain has sunk so far to the right that anyone offering to fund the NHS adequately is perceived to be a trot. Perhaps Corbyn's grey beard didn't quite help here. Corbyn's spending plans were outlined and fully costed. He offered to scrap university tuition fees, which saddle almost every student in the country, with around £50,000 of debt. That's around about 59,000 in euros. In more civilised countries, like Scotland, you tend to get university on merit rather than on how able you are to absorb a massive financial liability. Corbyn also restated his commitment to not incinerate a significant percentage of our planet's population. Again, this turned the faces of many middle-aged balding men a funny gammon colour. I suspect this is the same tone their pallor will take in the event of a nuclear holocaust. Most notably, and most publicly ridiculed, was Corbyn's proposal to offer everyone free broadband. I thought this was a pretty decent policy where the advantages spoke for themselves. John McDonnell, a total comrade, also demonstrated not only the economic viability of such a policy, but actually how it would add to value to the economy within a few years. Hearing such a glorious, positive message, one in which the most disadvantaged in our society would gain access to a basic service, thus allowing them a greater chance to participate in a life they'd consider good, the British media all ran the headline, Broadband Communism, in big scary red letters. Journalists found people willing to screech, but what about the businesses, into a camera, and, despite repeated attempts to explain the economics behind this, Piers Morgan et al. Just kept calling it financially irresponsible with no further argument or reasoning. I was a fool to expect anything more. Alongside Labour being misrepresented by the media, the Conservative Party literature were not above doing their fair share of misrepresenting. On the eve of the general election, a study was released showing that around 88% of the information, imagine scare quote hand gestures being made over the word information, contained in the official Conservative Party literature was just barefaced lies. So Labour had a positive message, free broadband, free universities, more funding for state schools, more funding for the NHS, etc. And the negative message about the Conservatives, increased use of food banks, child poverty increases, a massive bigot for a leader, etc. The Conservatives had an entire media willing to go easy on them during interviews and misrepresent the other folk during theirs. If Corbyn was the problem, I'm not sure any other politician prepared to carry on the Corbyn legacy will fare any better in the immediate future. One solution does propose itself. According to a recent poll commissioned by Tory peer Lord Ashcroft, a billionaire and the 95th richest person in Britain, Labour decisively won the under 44 vote with increasing margins the closer to 18 you went. The election was lost, basically, because we give the vote to Gen Xers and Boomers. Given that these people can't be trusted with a single brain cell, and that's one more than they seem to have already, isn't it just time to disenfranchise them? Something to ponder. One group of people who neither voted for Brexit nor a Conservative government was the People's Republic of Scotland, currently led by Chairperson Sturgeon, or that's at least how the English frame Scotland and indeed Nicola Sturgeon. The SNP, a self-professed centre-left party, has ensured that no Scottish student pay tuition fees, no person needing medical attention is turned away for neither immediate care nor treatment, consultations and prescriptions are free in Scotland, hospital parking charges and toll bridges have been abolished since around about 2012. Of the 59 constituencies in Scotland, 48 are held by the SNP, who are basically Labour with tacked on independence at this point. A mere 6 seats are Conservative. To be honest, I'm actually amazed it's that high. Anyway, Nicola Sturgeon is using the increased number of SNP MPs to canvass for a second Scottish independence referendum. Her argument, fairly plausible in my opinion, is that there has been a significant material change since IndyRef 1. The Scottish people, of which my accent betrays me as one, were told that if we voted to leave the EUK, we would have to leave the EU. Many people I know didn't want to leave the EU, and therefore voted to remain part of the UK. Fast forward a few years and the English and Welsh voted to leave the EU. Oops. I guess we didn't see that one coming. Ironic that this happened because of a man called Cameron, a traitor to his name if ever there was one. I'm really torn about Scottish independence. On the one hand, nationalism is bad and no borders, etc. On the other hand, given that borders, and borders for the foreseeable future, and given that the English are hell-bent on turning their country into a hellscape, perhaps an independent Scotland can implement a positive, progressive left programme. I mean, this is unlikely to happen, sure, but it's definitely more likely to happen than it is under the cursed current status quo. In short, if you're living in Ireland and you're thinking of moving to the UK, don't.
Our last contribution is from our own James, who, bizarrely enough, recorded this before he was captured and keel-hauled. But he's a long-term comedian, recovering comedian at this point, and currently works in the gig economy in Dublin.
So the first thing to say is fair play to everyone that went out and canvassed for Labour during the election. The next thing to say is that we lost quite badly. We lost for quite a lot of reasons, I think. Now, some of them were obvious from the start. Some of them people had been warning for a long time. Some of them I definitely didn't see coming. Certainly the fact that it was a Brexit general election, it would seem. I definitely, that was definitely a big gap and my thoughts. I will come back to that later on. But yeah, it was a very, quite a complex reasons that Labour lost. First thing to say as well, the third thing to say is that a lot of people on the left have started from the position after this election to say that people are brainwashed. You know, people in the north and northeast are completely brainwashed. If that is your starting position, then you should probably just leave the left now, because you're not going to win anyone over from that position. And you shouldn't complain if someone is brainwashed, because if they're brainwashed, then it's much more easier to bring them on to your side. The left has been losing our battles for a consistently long time now. For about 30 years, the left has been on the back foot. And a big part of that is because we don't set the agendas, we don't push forward enough. We pretty much are always a reactionary force at the moment. So a lot of that needs to change if we have a hope of moving forward in the future. We've got massive, massive problems on the way. Things are only going to get tougher. I think the election was important because it was putting some theories into practice that haven't been done for a while. Some of it worked, some of it didn't. I think one of our strengths, anyway, is as soon as we lost, people have gone into a thoughtful mode. Well, you know, some people have gone into thinking, right, where did we go wrong? Where did we go right? How we can push that forward? That is important because learning from your lessons, learning from your mistakes is a good sign. The centre have not learned a lesson at all. They haven't even thought about what's happened. Their initial reaction was to just start blaming Corbyn and the left and the socialist elements of Labour, etc., etc., Momentum. They're done. They're done for the centre in the UK for the time being. They don't know how to move tactics. They don't know how to alter a situation for their benefit. If centrism was something that the British people were interested in, then Lib Dems, the Funny Tinge Party, whatever they're called now, they would have, you know, picked up votes. The Green Party might have picked up a couple of votes. They didn't. Now, that split between the left and the centrist is definitely part of the reason why some seats were lost, though. I don't have hard, cold facts because it's kind of boring. I don't look at these things too much, but I definitely know that some seats, there was an increase in the Lib Dem share taken from the Labour vote, and that let the Tories get in. A lot of the seats, there is a very, very thin majority for the Conservatives. I really don't think that the Conservatives saw this coming either. I think it's come as much as a surprise to them as it's come to everyone else. It was a Brexit election. That was definitely a major gap in my thought processes. I find Brexit really boring. I think it's a non-issue, basically, the way that I see it. Now, I know it affects, you know, some people's lives, the moving lorries, etc., etc. But I'm also, you know, someone that's for Scottish independence or Irish independence, Irish unification, etc., etc. So if you want to change something, you know, you have these moments of systematic change. I would rather that the UK does stay in the EU, just because I think the EU needs to be reformed. But whether it stays in it, neither here nor there for me, and I find it incredibly boring discussion. The fact that it basically broke the brains of the commentariat of the UK, who didn't have a lot of brains to go around in the first place. But my unwillingness to really think about Brexit or even take it as a serious consideration, I thought a lot of people were on the same page as well. I thought Brexit was just, and Labour didn't want to fight a Brexit election. They just wanted to, that's where they were weakest, for sure. And I think Labour's position was compromised. I don't think they ever should have come down as a Remain party, which was something that was warned by, you know, people like me, whether you like Brexit or not. It was a democratic mandate. Not a very well-defined one, but it definitely was. And if you want to be taken seriously, you need to be seen to take the will of the people, seriously as well. Now, the reason that happened was because of Labour internal struggles. Labour is effectively at war with itself in about three or four factions, but the two major factions are between the PLP, who are effectively still centrist, most of them, and the Labour base, who are left, centre-left, and then you have people like Momentum that are maybe slightly more than centre-left, but they're certainly not the rabid socialists and Trotskyists as they're often set out to be. So a lot of Labour's problems since Corbyn has been elected came home to roost, and is going to continue to be a big problem. I'm not a Labour member. and nor shall I ever probably be. I don't live in England, for one. And, you know, as an anarchist, I don't really think parliamentary politics is that important. The reason I think it was an important election was more about how do you set out the ideologies that the left have. If we can't even convince people that the most piss-weak socialism, it's not even socialism, but, you know, it's like social, you know, just bring England effectively in par with, you know, European countries, and not even by that much. If we can't even convince vast waves of the population to do that, then how are we going to convince them to change the system, or even to get rid of the system? As you know, since this is an anarchist podcast, if you can't even convince someone that free broadband is a good idea for them, how the hell are you going to convince them that they don't need a landlord, or they don't need to work, and they can, you know, happily give up a little bit of their time or their wealth to make the world a better place? Labour were not seen to be an anti-establishment party. And the Conservatives managed to play a pretty effective trick, which is by wrecking the gaffe and then saying they're the only people that could fix it. Maybe haven't fallen for it full-heartedly, but they've definitely gone to see where the road takes them. Now, maybe they don't want to shake the boat because they're just getting on as it is. They're just barely surviving. And, you know, if they get, they're like, well, we'll just give the Conservatives another chance, because what happens if Corbyn comes in? And he is nearly as dangerous as he says, as the media says he is. I think we should also state that the BBC is now considered an enemy of the left. That might be some strong terms for some people, but I can't see them anything other than a combatant. I don't think they're a reformable institution anymore. Watching the election results coming in on Thursday, they could barely contain the glee in their faces, the contempt in their eyes. Places like The Guardian, The New Statesman, they should just be seen as sometimes useful, idiotic dogs to be deployed. But we really need to start making our own channels for the left and look at making our own structures to propagandize, because they're not going to carry our message. And if they will, it's only to ridicule it, even though a lot of the time it makes a much more sense in the position that they're arguing from. 5 years is going to seem like a very long time and a very short time. Getting Corbyn in was kind of important to me because I thought it would send a good message to the world. In Ireland, we've got all the same problems, maybe not as turbocharged as they are in England at the moment, but they're definitely well on their way. I mean, as I said, I don't really think that parliamentary politics is that useful, but it's a good breeding ground for your ideas. It's a good stomping ground to capture people. It's got legitimacy in the eyes of a lot of people. Wrongly, as far as I'm concerned. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be a guy on the corner with a sign shouting at people with egg in their beard? Or do you want to be the guy that's inside the house quietly murmuring like worm tongue into people's ears? And, you know, if you can change one mind, your job's done. You know, and we try and do that all the time as leftists, I hope anyway. I'm always pestering people, anyone that will listen, about politics, because it's important, because we need, you know, we really need to start changing people's minds. And in Ireland, you know, we need some sort of coalition, we need some sort of alliance that is going to start taking the left into Parliament, to then take it out again. You know, across the UK and Ireland, the left really needs to be getting its act together. We need to be doing community work, effectively. If we're seen to be taking landlords to task, taking bosses to task, actually, you know, giving people material gains other than just the promise that Labour had. Labour always should have been, always, ever since Keir Hardie set it up, it should have just been an anti-establishment party. It should have always been stronger in the unions, in terms of, you know, since the since Thatcher broke them, it really should have tried to pull them back. Now, we know the historic reasons for why this didn't happen. If we want to win going forward, anywhere, yeah, we need to be out there in the street. We need to be in people's homes, giving them a dig out. We need to be doing mutual aid. We need to, you know, be doing shows that they want to come and see, that give them relief, that make them think. We need to be stopping them from getting evicted. We need to, you know, make their working life better conditions. And unless we're doing that, then we're just not going to win, because the machine that we're up against is just too big, and it's only getting stronger as its position gets weaker. It's getting more ruthless. The tiniest hammer can have the biggest effect on the biggest machine. So it's really time to just start getting the boots on the ground and actually putting our money where our mouth is. It's the time. You know, most of us are tired. You know, you've got a 9-to-5 job. You want to watch some TV. You want to read some. You know, you want to dick about. We're not going to have these opportunities for much longer. We're going to go back to the 14-hour day. So, you know, what do you want to do? Give up 2 Tuesdays of a month, you know, every Tuesday of a month to set up a soup kitchen? You know, I mean, I don't know if a soup kitchen is going to do all that much difference, but we need to start somewhere, lads. We're really losing badly. Hopefully Bernie might be able to get in America. I doubt it. Something needs to be done. I'm just scared. I am, because that was an important election because people were going to die now. I don't know how much Labour was going to be able to backpedal and stuff. They were going to be hindered in Parliament. They're always going to have their issues. But universal health credits, NHS failing, unnecessary deaths up and down the country. Some of the you know, the most vulnerable members of society are now going to die under Boris Johnson's government. Some of them on purpose, but most of them just through blind ideological uncaringness. And there's just people that I'm worried about, because there's only so much help that you can give. I mean, it's all right to say that I told you so, but then, you know, if that's your position, then what did you do? Accelerationism doesn't work if all of your friends are dead. If everyone, you know, if everyone's too tired to actually help, if they're all just looking out for themselves. We really, really screwed the pooch on that one. Something like this really tests the mettle of a person. It really, what you're willing to do, where you're willing to go. I'm not so scared of the fight. I'm more scared of how far I'm willing to take it. My temper is much like my hair at the moment. It's getting very, very thin. I'm just getting sick of seeing the pain, seeing the suffering, and seeing the indifference that goes along with it. Yeah, we're going to take a couple of weeks. Let's strategize. Let's lick our wounds. But we're going to come back stronger. We're going to come back harder, because we have to. We don't have any choice. It's either that or get wiped out.
Alla mattina, appena alzata, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao alla mattina. Appena alzata, in risaia mi tocca andare. E fra gli insetti, le zanzare, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 e fra gli insetti e le zanzare, duro lavoro mi tocca far, oh mamma mia, oh che tormento, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 oh mamma mia, oh che tormento, io ti invoco.
bella, ciao 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 partigiano, portami via, che mi sento di morire, e se muoio da partigiano, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao ciao.